Chapter 16. Mag turning, I have it. This will do. Ujelicic, unite with Spangen's troops at Memingen, to fend off mischief there. And you, Risk, will make your utmost haste to occupy the bridge and upper ground at Olchingen, and all along the left bank of the stream, till you observe whereon to concentrate and sever their connections. I couch here and hold the city till the Russians come. A general in a low voice, disjunction seems of all expedients worst. If any stay, then stay should every man gather, endless, and close up hip to hip, and perk and bristle hedgehog-like with spines. Mac, the conference is ended, friends, I say, and orders will be issued here forthwith. Guns heard. An officer, surely that's from the Michaelsburg above us? Mac, never care. Here we stay. In 5 more days the Russians hail, and we regain our base. Exeunt severally. Scene IV, before Ulm. The same day, a high wind prevails, and rain falls in torrents. An elevated terrace near Olchingen forms the foreground. Dumb show, from the terrace Bonaparte surveys and dictates operations against the entrenched heights of the Michaelsburg, that rise in the middle distance on the right above the city. Through the gauze of descending waters the French soldiery can be discerned climbing to the attack under Ney. They slowly advance, recede, re-advance, halt. A time of suspense follows. Then they are seen in a state of irregular movement, even confusion. But in the end they carry the heights with the bayonet. Below the spot whereon Napoleon and his staff are gathered, glistening wet and plastered with mud, obtrudes on the left the village of Olchingen, now in the hands of the French. Its white-walled monastery, its bridge over the Danube, recently broken by the irresistible Ney, wear a desolated look, and the stream, which is swollen by the rainfall and rasped by the storm, seems wanly to sympathize. Anon shells are dropped by the French from the summits they have gained into the city below. A bomb from an Austrian battery falls near Napoleon, and in bursting raises a fountain of mud. The Emperor retreats with his officers to a less conspicuous station. Meanwhile Lannes advances from a position near Napoleon till his columns reach the top of the Frauenberg hard by. The united corps of Lannes and Ney descend on the inner slope of the heights towards the city walls, in the rear of the retreating Austrians. One of the French columns scales a bastion, but Napoleon orders the assault to be discontinued, and with the wane of day the spectacle disappears. Scene V, the same. The Michaelsburg, a chilly but rainless noon 3 days later. At the back of the scene, northward, rise the Michaelsburg heights. Below stretches the panorama of the city and the Danube. On a secondary eminence forming a spur of the upper hill, a fire of logs is burning, the foremost group beside it being Napoleon and his staff, the former in his shabby greatcoat and plain turned-up hat, walking to and fro with his hands behind him, and occasionally stopping to warm himself. The French infantry are drawn up in a dense array at the back of these. The whole Austrian garrison of Ulm marches out of the city gate opposite Napoleon. General Mack is at the head, followed by Geyle, Gotzheim, Kline, Liechtenstein, and many other officers, who advance to Bonaparte, and deliver their swords.
Mack, behold me, sire. Mack the unfortunate. Napoleon, war, general, ever has its ups and downs, and you must take the better and the worse as impish chance or destiny ordains. Come near and warm you here. A glowing fire is life on the depressing, mired, moist days of smitten leaves down dropping clammily, and toadstools like the putrid lungs of men.
To his lieutenants.
Cause them so stand to right and left of me.
The Austrian officers arrange themselves as directed, and the body of the Austrians now file past their conqueror, laying down their arms as they approach. Some with angry gestures and words, others in moody silence.
Listen, I pray you, generals gatherer. I tell you frankly, that I know not why your master wages this wild war with me. I know not what he seeks by such injustice, unless to give me practice in my trade, that of a soldier whereto I was bred. Deemed he my craft might slip from me, unplied? Let him now own me still a dab there. Mac, permit me, your imperial majesty, to speak one word in answer, which is this: no war was wished for by my emperor. Russia constrained him to it. Napoleon, if that be, you are no more a European power. I would point out to him that my resources are not confined to these my musters here. My prisoners of war, en route for France, will see some marks of my resources there. 200,000 volunteers, right fit, will join my standards at a single nod, and in 6 weeks prove soldiers to the bone, whilst the recruits, compulsion scavengings, scarce weld to warriors after toilsome years. But I want nothing on this continent. The English only are my enemies. Ships, colonies, and commerce I desire, yea, therewith to advantage you as me. Let me then charge your emperor, my brother, to turn his feet the shortest way to peace. All states must have an end, the weak, the strong, eh, even may fall the dynasty of Lorraine.
The filing past and laying down of arms by the Austrian army continues with monotonous regularity, as if it would never end.
Napoleon, in a murmur, after a while, well, what cares England? As he has won her game, I have unlearned to threaten her from Bowlen. Her gold it is that forms the weft of this fair tapestry of armies marshaled here. Likewise of Russia's drawing steadily nigh. But they may see what they see, by and by. Spirit of the years, so let him speak, the while we clearly sight him moved like a figure on a lantern slide. Which, much amazing uninitiate eyes, the all-compelling crystal pain, but drags whither the showman wills. Spirit ironic, and yet, my friend, the will itself might smile at this collapse of Austria's men-at-arms, so drolly done, even as, in your phantasmagoric show, the deaf manipulator of the slide might smile at his own art. Chorus of the years,
aerial music,
ah, no, ah, no. It is impassable as glacial snow. Within the great unshaken these painted shapes awaken a lesser thrill than doth the gentle lave of yonder bank by Danube's wandering wave within the Schwarzwald heights that give it flow. Spirit of the pities, but oh, the intolerable antilogy of making figments feel. Spirit ironic, logic's in that. It does not, I must own, quite play the game. Chorus of ironic spirits,
aerial music,
and this day wins for Elm a dingy fame, which centuries shall not bleach from her name.
The procession of Austrians continues till the scene is hidden by haze.
Scene by London. Spring Gardens,
before Lord Malmesbury's house, on a Sunday morning in the same autumn. Idlers pause and gather in the background. Pitt enters, and meets Lord Mulgrave.
Mulgrave, good day, Pitt. Eh, these leaves that skim the ground with withered voices, hint that sunshine time is well nigh past. And so the game's begun between him, and the Austro-Russian force, a second movement in the face about from Bowlen shore, with which he has hocused us. What has been heard on't? Have they clashed as yet? Pitt, the Emperor Francis, partly at my instance, has thrown the chief command on General Mack, a man most capable and far of sight. He centers by the Danube bank at Ulm, a town well walled, and firm for leaning on to intercept the French in their advance from the Black Forest toward the Russian troops approaching from the east. If Bonaparte sustained his marches at the breakneck speed that all report, they must have met ere now. There is a rumor. Quite impossible. Mulgrave, you still have faith in Mack as strategist? There have been doubts of his far-sightedness. Pitt,
hastily,
I know. I am calling here at Malmesbury's at somewhat an unceremonious time to ask his help, to translate this Dutch print the post has brought. Malmesbury is great at Dutch, learning it long at Leiden, years ago.
He draws a newspaper from his pocket, unfolds it, and glances it down.
There's news here unintelligible to me upon the very matter. You'll come in?
They call at Lord Malmesbury's. He meets them in the hall, and welcomes them with an apprehensive look of foreknowledge.
Pitt, pardon this early call. The packet's in, and wings me this unreadable Dutch paper, so, as the offices are closed today, I have brought it round to you. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.